Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
This is about the poultry tournament system that exists between poultry producers and integrators, where they are essentially in a position in the past to either earn more or actually earn less based on the condition and circumstances of whatever they produce.
New rule under the Packers and Stockyards Act, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
This is a rule that is essentially creating a much more balanced and fair tournament system in which producers can earn additional bonuses but won't necessarily be penalized. This is a rule that will provide them additional input concerning their responsibilities and have a better understanding of what the integrator's responsibilities are relative to input requirements, capital improvements, things of that nature. So it's really focused on the poultry tournament system.
This is Agriculture Today.
During the course of this administration, we've taken steps to reinvigorate our commitment to Packers and Stockyards by investing in more people who would be charged with the responsibility of ensuring the enforcement of existing rules and regulations under the Packers and Stockyards Act.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Tuesday announcing another rule under the Packers and Stockyards Act.
And by providing greater focus on the protections that it does afford. We also teamed up and continue to partner with the state attorney generals who have as their responsibility making sure that the competitive playing field is as competitive as it can be in their respective states by providing resources to enable them to investigate potential anti-competitive behavior. Also, one of the tools available to us are the rules and regulations under the Packers and Stockyards Act. And over the course of the last 4 years, this administration has taken the responsibility on of strengthening a number of those rules. We began that process by developing stronger directives concerning transparency in the relationships between producers and integrators. We wanted to make sure that producers received enough information and key information so they had a better sense of who they were doing business with when they entered into contracts in which they would be required to make significant investments. We followed that up with a rule that provides greater protection against acts of discrimination or retaliation that may occur when producers exercise their rights to communicate with government agencies and things of that nature. This rule does provide additional protections and additional steps that producers can take in the event they are faced with an act of discrimination or retaliation aimed at them or their operation. Today, we announced the finalization of a third rule, which is focused on a fairer poultry tournament system. This is a system that has come under a great deal of concern and criticism by producers across the United States. We've taken this opportunity to listen to producers about what would create a fairer system, a more balanced system. We were told by producers that the rule should provide greater insight into a company's payment rates under the tournament system. That in the past, tournaments would allow either increases in compensation or deductions from the baseline pay under an agreement and within a tournament. The rule that we announce today is one that will end the capacity to reduce the base pay, but would continue to allow, obviously, for bonuses to be paid based on the competitive nature of the tournament. Producers also indicated that they were deeply concerned and wary about the variability that existed within payment rates within specific tournament activities. In order to address that concern, this rule basically provides and directs that no more than 25% of the contract can be based on that variability and difference based on the tournament. Producers also indicated to us that they needed more information and greater stability when it came to the level of inputs that would be distributed in connection with the tournament system. This rule basically provides that stability and greater information. And finally, producers expressed the need for key information on the nature and extent of capital improvements that might be required in order for a contract to be renewed or to be entered into. The rule that we propose and finalize today will, in our view, provide that key information and provide stronger leverage for producers.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Every dime of defense is borrowed, every dime of non-defense discretionary, and this year, I'm doing this off the top of my head, which is always dangerous, I think it's about $400-some billion of what we call earned benefits, mandatory spending, is borrowed money.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert takes to the floor of the House of Representatives to outline the dangers of the debt.
Trying to just demonstrate, so there's this term we do, on-budget receipts. Okay, you got your paycheck. You look at your paycheck. Here's what went to FICA. Well, that's your Social Security contribution, a little bit of your Medicare Part A contribution, maybe a little bit of unemployment disability. Okay. That's sort of considered off-budget tax contributions. That's coming from your FICA tax. The other part is your income tax, capital gains tax, you know, all the other things. That's this blue here. To give you an idea, net interest this fiscal year, the interest we pay back to the people who've been kind enough to buy our bonds. And remember, China is not the number one owner of bonds. I think now it's Japan, and China's been actually rolling off its bonds for like 3-4 years. I think they're somewhere now in the $800-900 billion range of the $36 trillion in debt we have. Remember, about $28-29 trillion of that is what we sell out to the market. The others we borrow internally. So we borrow the Social Security Trust Fund. We borrow other monies internally. But we still have to pay interest. Which is, you remember, we're one of the only countries in the world that engages in this scam of saying, well, it's only the publicly borrowed money. No, because you owe interest. You're not going to pay your interest back to Social Security? Of course you are. But the point of this chart is trying to say accounting accounts for 24% of all those tax receipts we take in that aren't Social Security, aren't part of those payroll tax, 24%, it's just going to pay interest, and that's this year. And the crazy thing is these numbers were scored when we thought the mean interest on U.S. sovereign debt was going to be somewhere around the 3 and 3.25. Have you seen what's happened the last 3 weeks? Did I mention a moment ago that the 20-year bond yesterday went over 5%? This number is about to explode on us. It's called interest fragility. And yet, how many idiots like me have come behind the microphone and said, do you understand how dangerous it is if we make the debt markets nervous because we're incompetent?
He calls on members from both sides of the aisle to start telling the truth.
I have a 9-year-old and my wife, who's exactly my age, we also adopted another little boy, same birth mom. He's 2.5, cutest kid you've ever met. Little girl is brilliant and very loud. The math basically says my kids, your kids, will be part of the first generation in America to actually be poor. And to give you an idea how that math works, when little Matthew, who's 2.5 right now, basically is 23, 24, if you wanted to maintain baseline services in America as they are today, U.S. tax rates, every U.S. tax rate, tariffs, corporate, individual, everything has to double. 100% increase. And it's not pretend, it's called math. There's these little things you punch in, you can put batteries in them. Hell, you probably have one on your phone. It's math. But we're terrified to tell our voters the truth.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The monumental shift here, or at least the substantial shift, is a change in power in Washington, D.C.
Brad Lubin is a University of Nebraska Lincoln Extension Policy Specialist.
The results of the elections gave us Republican control of the House and the Senate and the White House. And it's the fact that one party controls all three corners, which might move us from a stalemate that we've largely been living with for many years to something that might result in significant inaction. I think as we watch the Farm Bill and we're the issues that we've been debating within the Farm Bill about potential increases in the safety net, both the commodity program and the crop insurance program, potential changes in the conservation title in terms of one-time Inflation Reduction Act money that might become part of the permanent baseline, as well as some guidance on how that's spent on climate, some issues that are always with us in terms of SNAP spending, and then some issues related to the secretary's authority over the commodity credit corporation spending. Those are the four issues that have fundamentally sort of stuck with us here through 2024. But maybe with an added kicker, if a farm bill gets done in sort of prompt order in 2025, it may look like the debate that we've had unfolding now. The longer it takes, it's also more likely that we begin to debate the fundamental role of federal policy and the amount of spending on federal policy. At least that's been a promise of the incoming administration to look at the size of federal government and the overall spending. Of course, it's still Congress that ultimately makes those decisions and legislative changes, but there could be a different tenor to the debate the longer we drive into 2025.
What about immigration?
You're right. Immigration is a huge issue, and agriculture is certainly highly dependent upon a workforce that is largely an immigrant workforce. There's the question of a legal workforce. There's the sort of ever writing overarching questions of how much of the workforce might be undocumented or illegal. Ultimately, there's a immigration and broader labor debate that has to occur, that has to be resolved. It might start with border enforcement and immigration enforcement, but then that means that a labor demand out there could be difficult to reach. And so perhaps hand in hand with increased enforcement is also an increased pathway for legal immigrant workforce, not necessarily immigration and citizenship, but a legal process that actually works. All of those are big issues. Those are not ag issues. Those are much, much bigger issues than that. But ag is one of those sectors that is certainly affected by the availability of that workforce.
So what do you need to know and do?
Agriculture producers, like every year, really need to be attentive to the process. If you wait for the headline to happen, it's maybe already done. And so so every group that sees these issues as significant and important really needs to engage in the process and be involved. That includes the traditional relationships that ag groups and other interest groups make with policymakers on Capitol Hill, but it also is relationships and understanding the rulemaking process within the executive branch. And we've seen, of course, there's the adage, what can't get legislated gets regulated. That is, the executive branch has to write rules, even if the legislative branch leaves it somewhat unclear. Well, what can't get regulated tends to be litigated. That is, we tend to battle in court over the interpretation of whatever rule ultimately gets written. You got to be involved at every step along the way there to understand the public policy process and to have a contribution.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
In the context of the work that we've done, these are three very incredibly important roles.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Tuesday with a new rule under the Packers and Stockyards Act for poultry.
In addition, we've put out an advance rule, notice of rulemaking on a fourth rule that would essentially provide for greater discovery in terms of cattle pricing, all of which is responsive to the concerns that producers have expressed to us during the course of the last 4 years. In addition to the Packers and Stockyards efforts, we've also focused on the seed report that was issued that recommended the creation and development of a seed liaison between the United States Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Patent and Trade Office. Additional disclosures concerning the quality and character of seeds so that producers would understand and appreciate whether or not the special seed that they were paying for was indeed, in fact, special. The product of the USA label and other efforts to try to ensure accuracy and appropriate representations on products being sold in our grocery stores, the development of a cattle contract library to give producers additional information about terms and conditions of contracts that exist, a stronger and more effective relationship with the Department of Justice, which has led to additional investigations and enforcement activities. I'm thinking of the case, the Wayne Sanderson merger, as two prime examples, and the previously mentioned relationship with the AGs. The last rule that was being considered by this department was harm to competition rule. Given the fact that there is limited time left, obviously, in this administration, it's a rule that won't be completed, and by virtue of that, it will be withdrawn.
And what about the rule and the next administration?
I would imagine that during the course of the nomination process for both the secretary and the deputy undersecretaries, that a number of questions will no doubt be asked about Packers and Stockyards or enforcement. And then obviously the Senate will have to make its determination based on the answer in response to those questions. I would just simply say that that what we've attempted to do in this administration is to be responsive to the concerns that we've heard by farmers and ranchers and producers. Throughout the last 4 years, we've heard a consistent set of messaging coming from the field that said, please provide greater accuracy on labeling so that folks don't get a premium for putting a product on a label on there that it just misrepresents the nature of the product being sold. Please give us more information about how we can determine whether a contract that we're considering is reasonable and fair, given what others may have been able to contract. Let us make sure that we have enough information to feel comfortable about who we're doing business with and how solvent they might be. And if by chance there's an effort to silence us from talking to a federal agency in appropriate circumstances, that we have recourse. And now make sure that if we participate in a tournament system that we got a fair shot and let the best producer win and be benefited as it should be in the tournament system. So we've tried to be responsive to the field, to the ordinary folks out there working hard every day, trying to make a living and trying to take care of their family and trying to make sure their operation remains profitable in a tough time and they're in a position to be able to turn it on to the next generation in better shape than they found it. I would sincerely hope that that's the motivation, and I suspect it might very well, hopefully will be, of any of the folks who are fortunate enough to have positions at USDA in the future.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
See everything in red? That's on autopilot. Your member of Congress doesn't even vote on it. What's in blue? Non-defense? Defense? All borrowed.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert is the current chairman of the Oversight Subcommittee for the Ways and Means Committee, also vice chairman of the bicameral Joint Economic Committee.
And a whole wedge of this over here. So understand the scale. And look, it's hard to see 12 zeros in your head, but that's just a trillion. We're probably going to borrow 2 1/3 trillion this year. And we have these debates and discussions. Oh, we're going to have to do reconciliation. Yes, of course we are. We still don't have 60 votes in the Senate. If we're going to move policy, of course we are. But understand the fiscal implications. If we don't do it right, does the debt markets and those demand a premium because you see what's going on around the world? What happened in Great Britain this summer? What they do to the guild? What happened in France a couple of weeks ago? What's happening in Germany right now? What's happening in Canada? What happened in South Korea? All over the world, you see governments falling, and one of the primary reasons they're falling is they actually tried to engage in some fiscal constraint. Are we going to be elegant enough to do it in a way where we can explain to the American people, if we do something smart today, we do not get crushed tomorrow? But small movements in interest rates start to consume everything in this government. And so here's an example. And this is, so I told you the 20-year yesterday went over 5%. Futures market, if anyone's a real geek, if you take a look at futures market on the 10-year sovereign, some of the futures market between now and through spring actually expect a 5% interest rate. If that 5%, and remember, that's still, what, a point, point and a quarter lower than the historic average when you get rid of the previous decade, which was just sort of fake interest rates. If we were to go to 5% of U.S. debt, that's actually fairly normal. And that gets built in. Remember, we bring about $10 trillion to refinance and the new so 5%. We go from a $13 trillion, almost $14 trillion debt expectation at current interest rates over the next 10 years to 22.7. It's almost $9 trillion additional from where interest rates were in December to where it looks like interest rates are going to be this spring. You just added $9 trillion in additional interest. That's called interest rate fragility. That is double just the interest rate exposure going back to even something that's below historic norm is double everything we're talking about doing in tax reform of extending the TCJA 2017 tax policy. It's double. This should be scaring the crap out of people around here. Why am I the only idiot running around with charts saying, are you paying attention to this? Are you watching what's happening in world debt markets right now? Does this make anyone nervous? Some of the articles are basically saying bond markets around the world are getting nervous, loaning to sovereigns because they keep borrowing like crazy. Well, what's going on in China where they're borrowing like crazy? We're borrowing like crazy. There's only so much borrowable money in the world, and we're chewing it up.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Basis is defined as the difference between the futures price for a commodity and its cash price at a specific location.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
Generally, when we're looking at the cash market basis, we're looking at the difference between the current cash price, say in Beloit, Kansas, versus the, if it's for corn, then the CME lead futures contract. And there are different terminologies for basis in terms of a weakening basis is one that's getting wider. The local cash prices is lower relative to futures. Strengthening basis, you'd have just the opposite, where the local cash price is getting closer to those futures. And you will run into situations where you have an even basis or amongst farmers or amongst the grain industry, they'll call it par, basically where the cash price and the futures price are local cash price, futures price are equal. And a positive basis or over basis is again, where when the local price is higher than the futures. And we have that actually almost as a standard situation in the Garden City area for corn, you know, strong demand center in the state. And so we generally have a positive basis there or a lower basis. And we've just seen that. Well, you tend to see that in times when we have more than adequate local supplies and the price tends to go lower.
So that's basis, but what are futures?
So generally futures prices are the value of a commodity at a point in time. It's determined through open negotiation and competition among buyers and sellers at a trade, where we used to say on a trading floor in the exchanges. Well, now we've transitioned largely to electronic trade for all that. So it's on a trading platform, which is a nice way to say it's computerized. But anyway, you have that and for instance, it wouldn't be uncommon to see December 2025 corn at say $4.50 or $4.25 or $4 setting here in early January 2025, looking all the way out there. So that's an estimate of what supply demand conditions will drive prices to. So that's a far distant price. And you have more current supply demand factors represented in the upfront or lead contract price. So at this time, it'll be the March 25 corn contract that we're looking at. And we could have the same discussion with regard to the other commodities that we're looking at. And when you talk about futures, we talk about the opens or the opening price for a trading session, the close, the last price for a trading session, settlement price, the midpoint of a closing price range. Is when you look at the internal, we see kind of a cleaned up version of what actually happens with all those trades, those thousands of trades that happen. They give us one price that they settle on, and it can be difficult to deduce what exactly that last price is.
Rich Llewellyn is a Kansas State Extension assistant.
One of the things that people do pay quite a bit of attention to is the harvest contract for grains. So for that, for soybeans, that's generally considered to be the November soybean contract. And then for corn, the December contract is usually considered the harvest contract for corn. For wheat, it would be the July contract for hardbred winter wheat. One other thing for Kansas here is that grain sorghum doesn't have a futures contract. And so corn is usually used as the proxy contract to kind of fill in for the grain sorghum. And so we a lot of times will calculate our basis. In fact, not lots of times, all the time, we'll calculate basis based on the corn futures contract and the sorghum cash price.
And this is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So this is the tax receipts, fiscal year 24. Okay, so it's a fixed number. That's the last fiscal year. The red here, that's the Social Security taxes, Medicare Part A, da-da-da-da. This was everything else. So even in that case, it's still basically 24% it's still 24 here. I just did this chart so you could see. When you hear someone talk about total tax receipts, this is obligated to earn benefits.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert outlining problems with the budget and nation's debt.
And oddly enough, this number isn't big enough to cover the earned benefits. That's why every month Social Security has to present its special T-bills to Treasury, cash in. So remember, Social Security does not add to the debt. Cashing in their special T-bills and the Treasury having to finance it and give the money back to Social Security does add to the debt. Just remember there's two steps in there.